This is the Rich Eisen Show.
The general sense of this quarterback class is we don't like him.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Kenny Pickett, this is a great quote. If you had an MF-er play right now, it's Pickett, but he doesn't have any GD upside.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network analyst Daniel Jeremiah, Ohio State wide receiver Chris Olave, co-host of Good Morning Football, Peter Schrager. Coming up, Penn State head coach James Franklin, plus actor Patrick Fabian. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. I'm heading to Las Vegas, Nevada tomorrow for a week-long, residency in Las Vegas, Nevada?
That's the correct word.
Rich Eisen residency?
Yeah,
okay, very good. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on this program. As always, we've spoken to Chris Olave of The Ohio State University, one of the many talented wide receivers in this year's draft. And that includes the one of top receivers in this year's draft, includes the cadre of Penn State Nittany Lions that are available to be drafted in this year's draft. And before Patrick Fabian of the hit television show Better Call Saul joins us in studio in this hour, we turn to the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line and welcome in the head football coach of Penn State football on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line, James Franklin. How you doing, Coach?
Good. How are you guys?
I'm doing just fine. So what does your day look like on a draft week? What's going on in the Penn State football world writ large, James Franklin?
Yep. We just finished up spring ball on Saturday. We had our spring game Saturday afternoon. Had 65,000 people at that. Had a bunch of former players on campus. A bunch of our draft-eligible guys were here as well. And now we're in a situation where our coaches have all, started the process of going on the road recruiting. And then I sit down and meet with every single player on the team individually for about a half hour. So got about 125 meetings to knock out, which is great. You get to know your team really well, but it also is, a grind. So looking forward to doing that.
And then how much is your phone get rung up by general manager, scouts, people who want to know about your guys last minute before the draft right now?
Yeah, it's really kind of spread out. It's over a period of time, probably for about the last month, I would say, between scouts, regional scouts, GMs, head coaches. So it's pretty spread out. You'll get some last-minute calls, but for the most part, you'll get five or six a week.
All right, so I'll just walk through the front door. Any Wisconsin area code phone calls to your cell phone about Jahan Dotson? Anything straight up on that front?
I found that the last couple of years that a lot of the predictions that you hear out there, you don't really hear from them close to the draft. I don't know if they're trying to keep it quiet or not, but obviously we heard from the Packers early in the process, regional scouts and things like that, but nothing here as of recent.
First time you laid eyes on Dotson was when, Coach Franklin?
Well, obviously high school. We recruited him out of high school. He was actually playing hard to get early on. He's from here in the state of Pennsylvania. Actually, it's kind of interesting. Him and Saquon Barkley are from a similar part of the state, kind of the Bethlehem area, Lehigh Valley. But he was kind of playing hard to get and actually committed to UCLA. And then we were able to flip him back to stay home late. But was a high-level track athlete, was a high-level basketball athlete here in the state, and then a really good football player. He's just undersized. He's probably about 152 pounds when he showed up on campus.
And so when did you realize he could be special for you, Coach?
He played for us as a true freshman and obviously was undersized at the time, but he just was so natural catching the ball. He's got as good a ball skills that I've been around. And I've been fortunate. I was the receivers coach with the Green Bay Packers, and I had Donald Driver. I coached Torrey Smith in college. I coached Jordan Matthews in college at the time, was all-time leading receiver in SEC history. I coached Jordy Nelson in college, played for me at Kansas State. I had Chris Godwin. I could go on and on. I've had a bunch of wideouts, and he's probably the most natural guy I've had in catching the ball in terms of being able to contort his body. He just catches the ball effortlessly, and it really doesn't matter where, over the middle, on the perimeter. He just has got fantastic natural hands.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Jordy Nelson, obviously Donald Driver, and all the other names you mentioned. I mean, Jordy's, I think he still has all the records at Kansas State. I think he still holds every damn last record that they put together there. So that's some very high praise that you're putting out there.
Yeah,
Coach
Jordy,
Franklin,
when he played for me, he had 122 catches for 1,600 yards in 1 year. And then the corner from Kansas, who is being highly regarded as well coming out in the draft, I'm having a brain fart right now, but Kansas had a really good corner, and him and Jordy went up against each other, and nobody really wanted to give Jordy credit. I'll leave that, you know, the reason why out of it right now. But nobody wanted to give him credit, and he got after him, and I think that kind of gave him credibility. But you know, Jahan is, I think, is really on that level and even higher. He's got a chance to be special.
Could that have been Aqib Talib back in the day?
That's exactly who it was. Thank you very much
you
for helping
it.
Fill in the dots.
No problem. Yeah, I mean, that would have been a heck of a matchup right there. What was that? So where were you in your career when you were out there back at Lambeau Field working for the Packers?
Yeah, I guess James. This was probably, I'm not good with stuff like this, Rich, right. But it was probably 15 or so years ago. I was the receivers coach with the Packers. I'd been at the University of Maryland with Ralph Regan for a number of years and had an opportunity to go to Green Bay. And then I left Green Bay and went to Kansas State as the offensive coordinator. Coach Sherman had gotten let go, and I had an opportunity to go to Kansas State as the offensive coordinator. So I went there, and Jordy was there, and ended up, obviously, we had a really good player, and we found every way possible to get him the ball. And everybody knew he was going to get the ball, and he still did, and kind of very similar to Jahan.
So
Jahan, everybody knew we were going to get him the ball here, and he just continued to do it week in and week out.
So did you have a front row seat to the Favre-Rodgers deal? Did you have a front row seat?
Yeah,
to that?
I was there. We drafted Aaron.
Yeah.
We drafted Aaron that year. I was there with him his entire rookie year. Obviously, Brett was our starting quarterback, and Aaron was the backup. So I was able to kind of watch that whole thing. I remember sitting talking about him in the draft room and what we thought about him. Yeah, so I was fortunate to be with Brett Favre, not bad, and I was there with Aaron Rodgers, and you know, the beginning of his career, and watch that. And then I coached Aaron's brother, Jordan, with the when I was at Vanderbilt. He was my quarterback at Vanderbilt. Now he's on the SEC Network.
Man, small world. James Franklin here on the Rich Eisen Show. I got to meet Micah Parsons in person, Coach, a few weeks ago, and he took my seat. Literally, that I'm talking to you from. Like he wanted to ask me questions, and I got up out of my chair and sat in the guest seat. That kid, he's convincing. Let's just put it that way. You know, when
yeah,
it all comes down
to
it.
He's got a lot of personality, and you know, I'm really proud of him. He's come a long way. We recruited him out of Harrisburg High School, and come here. He came here, and he just really thrived and flourished under the structure and the discipline. Graduated from Penn State in 3 years. I don't think enough people talk about that with Micah. And then obviously he's gone on to you know, have a fantastic NFL career so far. So a lot of excitement. I'm happy for a lot of things that are happening for him off the field as well.
Well, I mean, he didn't, as we all know, play for the year before he was drafted. What do you think is going on with college football and the way it makes it easier for a transition to the pros than back in the day, maybe when you were even coaching at Green Bay in 05, that 1 year that you were there? I mean, because it seems that we're seeing a transition for some players be more natural than others. Coach.
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. Well, first of all, I just want to be clear. He was going to play, and the Big Ten canceled the season.
Yes.
So Micah, you know, was not one of these guys that was going to opt out. You know, the Big Ten canceled the season. He had signed with an agent, you know, started training in California, and then a couple weeks later, the Big Ten changed that decision.
Right.
I just want to be clear on
no,
that.
No, we all unfortunately remember all of that.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're exactly right. But yeah, you know, I think a couple things. I think part of it is very similar to in college, right? It's a little bit less of an old school mentality where rookies don't play and freshmen don't play. If they're good enough to play and they're talented enough to play, you better get them on the field. And I think the NFL has taken a more aggressive approach with those types of things. There's still probably some arguments at the quarterback position, what is the best way to do it. But I just think there's more of an aggressive approach when it comes to GMs and the scouting department and the coaches to say, look, this guy's talented. He may not be able to do everything, but he can do some of the things, and let's start with those things and continue to let him grow and evolve as the season goes on. And, that's kind of what I'm seeing. And, we've been fortunate to have some guys like Micah go in and be able to impact early. I think Dan Quinn did a great job as well. I spoke to Dan. I thought Dan did a great job, not only from a coaching perspective, but he did a great job with me. Dan would call me. I probably talked to him 6 times during a season where there'd be a different thing going on. He wanted to ask me my opinion on how to work with Mike and how to handle this with Micah, and could I reinforce this with Micah. And I think Dan's just got a really good understanding that it's more than just the schemes and the X's and the O's. It's about how to relate to players, how to connect with players. And I know him and Dan have a really good relationship, and Dan worked at it. So I think, Mike is one of these guys. He's going to thrive in that type of system when he's got a really good relationship with his position coach and coordinator.
Well, speaking of thriving in a system, what are your 2 cents, not to turn you into an analyst, but I'll do it anyway, the sense of Saquon in Daboll's system that he's bringing to the New York, New Jersey area? What do you think of that, James Franklin?
Yeah, I know Coach Daboll very well for a number of reasons. The owner of the Bills, Terry Pegula, is a Penn State grad, so we had that connection. His son actually is an undergraduate student at Penn State and works in our football office, so I've gotten to know him really well. I think it's got a chance to be a really good fit. And then I also, I'm a big believer, obviously, in Saquon, not only the type of player he is, but the type of man he is. So I think he's going to work well. And I think Coach Daboll is going to do a really good job of putting Saquon in the best positions to be successful in terms of what they do with the offensive line and tight ends, but also, playing to his strengths, which is getting him in space as much as possible. I think, his rookie year and here at Penn State, getting him the ball in the passing game and out in space to take advantage of his, his ability to make people miss and, his ability to burst and really play well in space, which I think is one of his strengths. I think he's got a chance to have a really good year. I know he's been frustrated. So there's nothing I would love to see more is to him have a great year for the Giants and Coach Daboll.
Before I let you go, Coach Franklin, I've asked this question of, I asked it of Nick Saban last week, as well as Lane Kiffin, a couple of other colleagues of yours, just Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. Dabo Swinney said that because of the name, image, and likeness rules and the lack of, I guess, uniformity coast to coast, that there's going to be a complete blow up and restructuring of all of college athletics, especially football, and there needs to be. Would you agree with that assessment, James Franklin?
Well, the first thing I would say, Rich, is it's no different than any other industry, right? When the rules change or the scenario changes, you better change with it. You better embrace it completely and change and adapt and evolve. So that's what we are doing. In theory, I think this rule makes total sense. And there's a lot of things that I think, we should have been looking at. We should have been making adjustments over the last, 30 years in college athletics and specifically football. What I would say is there's obvious challenges. I don't think the NCAA's done a really good job of educating the public and defending the NCAA themselves about the challenges. The NCAA's been getting beaten up over the last couple years, and rightfully so in some circumstances, but I don't know if people truly understand the challenges that come with the model. And that's what I would say. There's going to need to be some help. There's going to need to be some I think you used the word uniformity. I think that's going to have to happen at some point. We don't have it right now, but let's also be honest. There hasn't been uniformity, before. So it is challenging. There's no doubt about it, but we've embraced it at Penn State. We're going to move forward, but there's going to be some changes, significant changes in college athletics. I think over the next 5 years, maybe faster than that. There's a lot of talk about maybe football and basketball breaking away. But I think there's going to be some significant changes in college athletics and specifically football over the last 5 years.
What would you want to see? What would you want to see? James Franklin, you could wave a wand. You're now in charge. What do you want to see?
I think at the end of the day, I think the reality is you'd like for everybody to be playing by the same rules, and you'd like for the student athletes to have the ability to take advantage of the opportunities that they have and maybe an opportunity that they may not have after college. So I think there needs to be you need to get a group of people in the room, whether that is from the government perspective, whether that is from the state's perspective, and from an NCAA perspective, and get athletic directors, commissioners in a room and say, okay, what do we need to do that's in the student athletes, and what do we need to do that's in college football's best interest? And I'm talking about it as simple as, we're trying to come up with the best teams for the college football playoffs, and some schools some conferences are playing 8 conference games, some are playing 9, some are playing FCS opponents, others aren't playing FCS opponents. There should be a standardization across college football from a scheduling perspective, from conferences. Do you have a conference championship or not a conference championship? The Notre Dame sitting out on their own with independence, there needs to be more consistency across the board. I don't know how you can ask a group of people to sit in a room and come up with the 4 best teams in college football and everybody's playing under different circumstances. So I think that's one example, but I do think across the board we need to find a way to come up with rules no different than any other league, so that you can do the best job of evaluating and making sure everybody understands the rules and everybody's playing by the same rules.
What number of playoff teams would you like? What number would you be happy with?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I really haven't had a problem with the current structure because I do think there has been a significant drop-off after maybe the top 5 teams or the top 4 teams. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a strong opinion. But I just think it needs to be consistent across the board. I think, everybody should be playing the same number of games. Everybody should be, in terms of, playing FCS opponents. Those are the things, to me, I'm more passionate about. I think you can make an argument of going to 12, but again, you don't want to get into a situation where you make these changes, but it's the same 2 or 3 teams that are winning the championship every single year. So I don't think we need to go to, what basketball has done with 65 teams and things like that. I don't think we need to do that, but I do think every major conference, their champion should be in. I do also believe if there's 2 teams from 1 conference, it should be the best teams in college football. And I think everybody, should have that opportunity. Obviously the group of 5 have done some fantastic things as well, and they deserve an opportunity. So, I think by expanding a little bit, it allows you to do that. We won the Big Ten championship a few years back and didn't get into the playoffs. That's a hard pill to swallow. But I don't think we need to go too far with it.
Coach, thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it. Let's connect during the summer and beyond. Right. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
You're right back at you. That's James Franklin, head coach of Penn State football. Jimbo said 12. Mm-hmm. He says 12. I like 12.
Who said 16? Didn't someone say 16?
Well, Jimbo said 12 or 16.
Okay, right.
But 12, again, would mean every major conference gets their person in. And then there's a couple at-larges, obviously. Right. And then
Notre Dame makes it, and then...
So that would be like an old NFL playoff, right?
Yeah, you'd have a couple byes.
A couple and byes? Then, yeah. 3 plays 6, 4 plays 5, let's go.
Figure it out. I don't know who, I've come around on it, but I don't know who
says no.
Yeah.
Who says no? I think Dabo said no. Didn't he say no? He's like, how many games are we going to have to play? 16, 17, 18? Remember that? I know you're not a fan.
I got larger issues.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. It's still to come. We'll take your calls, but when we come back, let's talk, let's go Hamlin Dingo Blue. Let's go do it. Hamlin Dingo Blue, right? Very good. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's Ibotta in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. Better Call Saul, available Mondays at 9 Eastern Time, back here on our terrestrial radio outfit with Patrick Fabian, who plays Howard Hamlin in the great, brilliant show Better Call Saul here on the show. Okay, so you guys are all shot out, right? It's all done?
It is all done. It is just going to be laid out for you at this point. So, you know, just like you, Monday night, you know, I sat down to watch it again. Like right. I have since the beginning, because yes. I've said this before, you know, I'm in a nice show about lawyers who have emotional problems. And then I watch the show and I'm like, what are we doing in the desert? What's all this gunplay going on? So it's a revelation for me, too. You know, especially this season, because
yes.
we're so much of a family on the show. We would go and watch each other's scenes when we weren't in them, you know. So I spent a lot of time watching other stuff, supporting one another. But mm-hmm. because we were shooting during COVID restrictions, things got really tight and narrow. So this season especially, you know, I would read the scripts and know what was going on, but
right.
I only would be a part of what Howard was doing in this final season. And so Monday night was a reminder of, you know, I'd read it about a year ago, and all of a sudden I'm like, that happened.
Right.
And it was all sense memory for me. So it's unfolding brand new for me as well.
And then you also get to see how it is all shot as well. And it's just so beautiful. The whole thing is just remarkable how this show plays on the screen.
Well, you know? Marshall Adams is our DP and director of photography. And we got to go ahead and see the premiere in a movie theater at the American Legion here in Hollywood. And it was a reminder that these guys are painting pictures for the big screen. It's so lusciously, you know, lit. Mm-hmm. And shot, you know, right. Ray Seahorn said to me early in, I think it was season two, man, that was the first season. And she came up to me at one point, she'd done a day of work, and she came to me and she goes, look, I'm not accusing you of Patrick of being the kind of actor who's waiting for his close-up to turn it on. I would never accuse you of that. She said, however, if you are,
yes,
she goes, I just did a whole days of work yesterday. She goes, and I'm pretty sure they're using the wide. And sure enough, I've been in a number of scenes in this where the final product is a shot and we're two silhouettes and you hear the dialogue and they never punch in on my face. Not that I'm counting.
Patrick Fabian here on the Rich Eisen Show. And the actors that you have been with on screen are throughout this entire series. You know, and again, this is very serious stuff, but I mean, there is a certain comedic element. Sometimes you can laugh at some of these scenes as well. And the character Saul Goodman certainly from Breaking Bad, is that you've got Bob Odenkirk, Michael McKean, okay, who was in the first several years of this show.
The mighty Michael McKean, I like to call. You know, I mean, anytime I read a scene and I saw that Michael and I were in a scene together, I thought, right. Oh, we're okay because Michael's in it.
I mean, and did you ever pull him aside and ever pick his brain about, like, Spinal Tap or anything like that or back in the day?
You know, both him and Bob aren't jukeboxes. Like, hey, tell me a story about this. Right. So I learned to sort of, like, rope him in sideways to get him talking about something.
Yes.
They're avid readers. And so when they weren't working, they would sit there and they would read hardback books. They were voracious readers about all sorts of things. Okay. And they would trade the books back and forth to one another. I'm not saying that Ray and Mando and I didn't sit there and read as well. We read tweets and selfies. So, I mean, you know, not like I'm totally throwing them under the bus.
You're very well read, man, and 280 characters at a time. I understand. Yeah,
absolutely.
That, I follow you on Twitter. So,
but sometimes we would be like, hey, what about da da da? And all of a sudden, McKean especially would be like, he'd overhear like a snippet of a conversation. He'd go, oh, that's interesting. When I was working with the Credibility Gap in the 1970s, and then we would just put down our stuff. Because he would go on a story and roll with stuff. So that's how we would get gems out of him and Bob.
I mean, just the stories that he came on this show last year or something like that.
Something like that.
And I just kept on peppering him one after another because of the stuff that he's done. And now I just saw, I just reminded again, episode one of this season, you're with Ed Begley Jr., which is another
one.
I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, Ed Begley Jr., speaking of Spinal Tap, was one of the drummers that exploded in Spinal Tap.
Was he?
Yes, he was.
If you said any phrase, I think Ed Begley was fill in the blank.
And
there's
everything.
Like a good 50-50 chance.
Yes,
that's true.
In the black and white photo videos of the early days of Spinal Tap, when the drummers began to explode, he was the first one who exploded, Ed Begley Jr.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But he's great to work with, too. Ed is just, you know, an open heart. He's been around. He knows what's what. And and also working with Ed, kind of like with working with Michael, I'd be in the scene and, you know, of course I'm in the scene. I'm a professional. I would not be thinking about anything other than what my character is thinking.
Nice.
But on occasion,
yes.
I would sit there and I'd get outside of myself going like, that's Michael McKean I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, that's Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes with Ed, I would also be like, is Ed listening to me? Because Ed has that wonderful quality about him where he's completely present, but it almost looks like I feel like my words are like going over his skull.
Yes.
And he's just like, I don't even know what you're saying. He's just going to say what he wants.
Well, I love this show, and it's always so difficult to interview anybody who's involved with this show or with Breaking Bad prior to it, is because you can't tell me a damn thing about what's coming up, nor would I kind of want to know it
either.
You know, but I still do want to know, because the aspect about this show that's fascinating, and certainly your character is one of them, is that your character created for this series, not from the Breaking Bad world. But I'm wondering how you do get connected to that world and why you're not in it. And that's part of, and the same thing with Rhea Seehorn's character as well, to see how your characters wind up and then what happens to you. You're one of the few characters where I'm kind of on the edge of my seat wondering if you make it.
Well,
or
I
not,
mean, part of that's the setup from the end of season 5, which in case you haven't watched is on Netflix.
Attaboy.
A 1-5 are available on Netflix.
Okay.
You know, they sort of set it up that Kim and Jimmy have their sights set on Howard, wanting to take him down.
You.
So I think there's concern there. And the fact that we don't exist in Breaking Bad. But as it's been pointed out, we never saw Saul Goodman go home during Breaking Bad. He was always at the office. So there's that idea of like him and Kim can be together. Does he go home to Kim? Also, in life, don't always have to have something dramatic to all of a sudden no longer be friends or be involved with one another. As of this point, Howard's washed his hands of Kim and Jimmy. You know what I mean? So by all we know, you know, for all we know, in Breaking Bad, Howard's just still, you know, putting around doing his law, doing his thing. There's no reason to have him in Breaking Bad. So I don't know. I can tell you this, though. Vince and Gilligan aren't the kind of Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould aren't the head writers who just write to show something for splash. Everything that they have happen to all the characters happens because the story dictates it. So you're in good hands with that. If you've liked what you've seen so far, I guarantee you're going to be very interested in seeing what happens with all of season 6.
Is it possible that your character's managing the Cinnabon where Saul Goodman has to go hide out in the next?
Love it. Would that be great?
Pull back.
Would that be great?
What a twist.
He's the regional manager. He's just coming in to check on what's going on. Are we using enough icing?
Like you're telling him to sweep up.
This is not standard.
That would be great.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm more concerned about Howard's golf game. Like, what's his handicap?
Well,
it's got to be great.
It is great because he's got a lot. That's where he does his business. I mean, let's face it. Chuck McGill was doing the heavy lifting at HHM. Right. So Howard's definitely on the course. I'd say he's a 9, but he says he's a 12.
That's right.
So he can look
course. Of course, Howard's got he's gaming. You know, scheming. We do know though that Howard is a boxer because again, I follow you on Twitter, Patrick Fabian.
Yes.
And I saw this video on your account about teaching how somebody to hit an uppercut or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was on the Better Call Saul account as well. It's Howard in his suit showing how to deliver an uppercut.
Have you not seen this?
No, I have not.
I think we have it. Do we have that?
Oh,
I think we have this video because I saw this the other day, and it looked like it was somewhat official, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
And I don't know if you do you have any boxing history or anything?
I do not have any boxing history. I will say, though, in order to do the video, I did do a little bit of boxing training.
Ah.
And my appreciation for all the muscle groups that you can use when boxing went way up.
Okay.
Because, of course, the first day of training, I was like, oh, let's lay into this. Let's, you know, yeah. I'll show you how hard I can hit. And then the next morning, I was getting out of bed, and I'm like, those are my lats. I didn't realize that.
There you go.
You know, they come at us with a lot of different things. If it's a Jonathan Banks answer, he'd be like, no way, I'm not doing that. But me, I'm just like, what next? What? I'm up for anything, so.
We had Jonathan Banks called in one time, right? And he cursed 15 times. He didn't want to answer any questions. We were done. Seriously, that was about it. Yeah. I didn't know Ermin Trout was actually calling, and I thought he was calling.
Pretty funny.
Yeah, certainly when I asked him about him getting, wasted at the beginning of 48 hours, he was not even into that conversation.
Oh, my God. They bring that up all the time.
Maybe that's right.
Yeah, they bring him up all the time. I think he's had it up to here.
I know.
I get shot.
Beverly Hills Cop, too.
Damn it. See, I walked in. I needed red flags. I should have called you first.
I can give you approved questions for him next time.
Patrick Fabian here on the Rich Eisen Show. All right, this is like Penn State Hour, huh? We just hung up with James Franklin and look,
how about
you
that? Thanks, guys, for scheduling the head coach.
Yeah,
for me, I'm class of 87. Last time we won the championship.
87.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was there for the Jopa years and all that stuff. And
what wearing the camouflage against the Hurricanes and stuff like that?
This is actually from this year. I got to go back. I was fortunate enough to. I'm old enough now that I got an Alumni of the Year award with five others from the College of Arts and Architecture.
Tremendous slap.
So I got to go back up and see the stadium and kiss the lion and do all that.
Okay. Who was going through that with you? Anybody that we would know?
Well, as a matter of fact, here's a shout out. Adam Cohn, who works for Converse.
Okay.
He got me these shoes, as a matter of fact. He's a Penn State guy.
Okay.
And then, the College of Arts and Architecture is not just a bunch of actors, it turns out. Narcissists. I was like, what? We're only actors, right? It's architects and people who are doing great stuff with their art for other people as well. I was reminded that I'm the only one who came out to get my picture taken in Los Angeles, which, by the way, I guess is a skill. So we'll.
All right. So you that was back in that day, and I heard you were at the Super Bowl this year. Is that a true story?
Oh, that's funny. No, Rich, I wasn't at the Super Bowl. I've been watching the NFL for about 45 years now.
What happened?
And it turns out that my 11-year-old daughter,
yes,
her very first NFL game was the Super Bowl, because my sister-in-law works in the corporate world, and sometimes corporate tickets shake off the wagon, and that's Abby right there. It's her very first NFL game. She's rooting for the home team, and she's sitting right behind the Bengals end zone. So she watched all the first half scoring, then watched the great halftime show, and then watched the final two-minute drive come right down her throat.
Wow.
And so she got me a sweatshirt, which was nice.
So you were not there, but she was?
No, I didn't get a chance to go. So I was like,
damn.
I told her, I said, look, you've now gone to your first game. It's the hometown team.
Yes.
It's the Super Bowl.
In the town.
And they won, and you watch the final two-minute drive come. You don't ever really have to go see another game.
That's it.
You're done.
That's pretty much done.
Yeah.
But I assume even though she roots for the Rams, she shares her father's distaste for the Bengals, I'd imagine?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about this.
Since you're a Steeler,
here's the thing. I'm a Steeler fan. Yes. I grew up in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
But as my daughters pointed out, I've been living in Los Angeles for 35 years.
Yeah.
And so they said, when are you going to root for the home team?
Oh.
So we all got Ram stuff, and I wondered what the violin. There I am.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there
my
I am.
God, and, I don't know who you are anymore. Wow. What, you're on the beach for the volleyball?
Are you allowed to have two teams? At least it's not in conference.
That's the right place.
You know what
right
I mean?
You have no idea what you've walked into.
I'm a professional.
Turn over your right shoulder and say hello to Altoona, Pennsylvania's finest, T.J. Jefferson.
Okay, so what's the deal? Can we?
Well, it depends. Are we talking one sport?
I'm talking just football right now.
You know, I get a lot of grief because I have multiple teams in college, but it's, Patrick, football's 17 games. But you know what? If you're Steelers and the Rams, you know, you're two different conferences, two different coasts.
Two different conferences, yeah.
I'm all for it. I say do what you like.
I like that, too. I mean, I'm kind of rationalizing. I'm like, oh, it's for the kids. But then I look like a carpetbagger because all of a sudden I'm wearing a brand new Rams sweatshirt a month before they win the Super Bowl.
What would all the Yinzers think of the man with his volleyball on his beach?
Oh, they would not like
his shades and his Rams
gear. The fact that that's been aired now, I'm pretty much dead in the water with Steeler Nation.
I mean, your
Primanti
Brothers card has been revoked.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Your privileges have been revoked. But I mean, but T.J. Jefferson roots for the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
even though he's from the middle of the state, rooting for the Cowboys. Right.
But he roots for
Penn State and Florida State, right? And in college, there it is, right up on the screen. These are all his teams.
Okay. All right. I get it.
But there's a reason.
Philadelphia and the Clippers.
Teams.
Wow.
Georgetown and Duke and Penn State and Florida State and the Penguins and the. And
that's
the,
a lot.
The Mets.
I feel better.
The Mets.
Wow.
See, now.
Is that why he's in the quarter?
Hold on. Now let me ask you this question. Partially, yes. Second, now that you have received the okay to root for multiple teams.
Thank you.
It's okay with
from
me.
Him, and you were ready to accept that. Now that you know all the information, are you concerned that he's the one that allows you to feel good about yourself?
As long as I get a green light, I'm going to take it.
And you got
I'm going to take it.
Thank you, Patrick. The fact is, I am
the guy who's playing volleyball every weekend in Los Angeles.
I wouldn't worry. I mean, this person isn't anymore.
Mike and I are Rams season ticket holders. And
Dude, come on, stop it. Rams season ticket holders. You're honestly.
Six years I've had season tickets.
How many games in 6 years have you gone to?
Great question. I don't know.
If the Steelers are playing the Rams, that's the guy for you to talk to.
Because they'll definitely sell you.
Second row.
That's the guy to talk to.
They're such diehard fans, Patrick, that they'll give up their ticket.
His nickname is StubHub. I'm just joking.
Well, you gotta pay the rent somehow, right?
That's StubHub over there.
My guy, StubHub.
No, SeatGeek over there.
Very well done.
I don't know, maybe.
Well, thanks for working me through the shame. I appreciate it.
No shame, Patrick. No shame.
We're always here for you.
Altoona, Pennsylvania, if you could describe it as one of two things, you can only describe it as one of two things. You have to give me an answer here. East Coast or Eastern Time Zone? One of the others. East Coast or Eastern Time Zone?
I'll give it East Coast.
What?
Horseshoe Curve.
Look out. He's coming over again. He's coming over to tap you up.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know what we're talking about.
Where are you from exactly?
Harrisburg.
Patrick, Michael Parsons.
Please tell me you were born in Harrisburg General Hospital.
I wasn't. I was born in Pittsburgh.
Sorry.
Nice try. We have some nice party.
Me and Micah Parsons, though, represent
really good.
This is my favorite guest. I mean, I've always been a fan.
That's because he brings, you know, because he brings HHM swag.
Oh, hey, speaking of which, this may be a regift.
I don't care. What
do
you got?
Betting slip.
Did I give you
pens? Pens for everybody. Oh wow, they come in its own little. Look at this. Look how they come in. Whoa.
Yes.
Comes in its own very nice.
We are in.
Oh yeah. Very nice. Yes.
I get two. I'll take it.
Thank you, sir. With my Hamlin McGill notebook from the last time you were here.
Hamlindigo blue. Oh no, it's black. That's odd. That's very, very ironic. It's not. I thought it would be Hamlindigo
blue.
We're serious when we sign our names.
Absolutely.
Is that a sign for what's coming on this season?
What is coming on the season? I don't know. Tonight's episode is a real rocker. And I tell you what. Here's the thing. The truth is, and yes, I'm in the show, and I feel like I'm a homer on this. They really deliver this season. It's really good. All the bowls that they've rolled up to the mountaintop, that are starting to teeter and roll down.
Into your driveway.
Oh man, they careen, they do stuff. You're not gonna not be
all right.
Undisappointed.
Do you have the Namaste license plate?
I have one of them.
Yes.
Okay.
Fantastic. That's amazing. That's a good one. What else have you got from them?
You know, those pens, they only made one. They only made one for seven seasons on the show. It sat there the entire time. Properties made one in the very last day. That's not it. Damn it! The very last day, they gave it to me. Properties gave it to me. And they said, here, man, take this. So that's the only thing I really took. Okay. And I always get asked about the suits.
Yep.
You know, do the suits come home with me? Because they're tailor-made for me. DiStefano in downtown Los Angeles, they do them. And Jennifer Bryan is the wardrobe designer. She put me in them. They did 90% of my work on the show, without a doubt. Those suits are not mine.
Oh.
Well, I mean, they paid more for the suits than they did for me, to be honest, you know, to be fair to Sony. So they're gonna keep those.
Well, you look great in them.
Thanks, man.
And you're awesome. You're awesome. And this show is awesome. New episodes again of the sixth and final season of Better Call Saul, Monday nights, including tonight at 9 Eastern on AMC. And the second part of the final season will beginning July 11th. The man who plays Howard Hamlin, Harrisburg's finest, although we just don't know who he is anymore, rooting for the Rams, playing beach volleyball in his custom-made suits from DiStefano here in Los Angeles. But you're still the same old Patrick Fabian. Thanks for coming on, sir.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
Patrick Fabian on Twitter. I follow him. You should as well. We're back here to set up the rest of the week. Look at that, man. I do not know who that man is anymore.
California living.
Look at that. There's no yins up there.
No, baby.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Bleav Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the show. Let's take some phone calls. Orlando has been waiting forever in San Antonio. What's up, Orlando?
What's going on, Rich? How y'all doing?
I'm great. What's on your mind?
Look, I'm here for you, Rich. I'm a Colts fan, but look, I love your enthusiasm for your Jets.
Okay.
You don't need sauce at number four. Now, you all cannot get to the quarterback at all.
Okay.
You sacked Tua once. You sacked Josh Allen once. All of last year, you got to Mac five times, but you only sacked Carson Wentz one time. The Jags got to him seven times in two games. Jordan Davis, Jermaine Johnson, N'Kobe Dean, players that you all need on your team.
Yeah, but not fourth overall, though. You know, I understand.
I'm just saying. In general, with the fourth or tenth pick, I'm just saying there's more. The Jets need. Than sauce. A great filet doesn't need sauce. Only salt and pepper. You know, you can't have
DJ.
You know, you can't have sauce with no front line.
I hear you, but thank you for the call. In terms of that, Carl Lawson hopefully is going to come back healthy. They got Vinny Curry, who had a freak reason why he couldn't play last year, and. What helps get a pass rush home is looking downfield and seeing nobody open. That helps. And I like this kid's makeup big time, and I cannot wait to talk to him tomorrow morning, and I hope I just don't creep him out.
Rich, I hate when I go to a steakhouse.
How's that for a goal in interviewing somebody?
It's a pretty solid goal.
I hate when I go to a steakhouse and they tell me I can't have A1 sauce. I mean, give me the sauce. I don't care how good the steak is.
A1?
Well, just some sauce.
I'm not taking him to any steakhouse.
I like A1.
Mike, you can't go into a steakhouse and ask for
A1
steak.
There's not even. Are you kidding me?
Imagine going into Losers and saying you want the A1.
Look, I just if Mike, I want it, I want it.
Mike might be my ally here.
It's like Tapatio. I mean, it's great, but it's like you don't put Tapatio on a
Can't have it.
You can do it. Like I just told Patrick Fabian, you do whatever you want. All right. If you're paying $250 for a Peter Luger steak, you can put one.
He's so nice, Patrick Fabian. He's saying, like, you know, maybe you can root for more than two teams. And he had no idea what he just strolled into in this place. And then he hears from TJ, somebody from his home state, his home area. He feels a connection with TJ and accepts TJ's acceptance of him for rooting more than just one sports team. And then we showed him all the sports teams he root for, and he thought, like, this guy's a little bit weird. Like, you could see that kind of go over him. And when I pointed it out, he was too nice to say, I can't.
I mean, that's how you
TJ
look at
anymore.
It. You just Maggie didn't agree with you.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Just
he
like
sees
you got
all
mad,
of these disgusting. Pennants up on the screen.
By the way, disgusting. Just like you got mad when Stephen A. Smith didn't agree with my
Velvet Rope. All of a sudden, it's that person you sat next to on a plane the entire time, and then you feel like you've connected, and then you start, as the plane's descending, you see all the insanity that this person's really all about. You're like,
the
I cannot wait
till
that gate
door
opens.
For
I cannot wait till the door gets to the gate.
Let me tell you, you're the guy.
I cannot wait till where this plane gets to the gate. I got to get out of here.
They like you until they land, and then they're trying to catch an elevator, and you push clothes on the door for them, right?
Okay, you could try and bring stuff up on me that thinks that it splashes back on me, but I am
it does.
Still,
that's far worse than me not liking teams.
Are you kidding me? No.
Come on.
Apples and oranges. I will always hold a door for the elderly or for a woman. But if you're a guy and I'm going to a top floor and I know you're going to get on the elevator as the door is closing and you are more likely, it's like pulling a high card. If you got a jack, you know, very, very, with a great probability, the next person pulls a card, it's lower than yours.
I'm glad you're talking yourself into thinking.
I already have a king. I've already had a king, and now we're playing high card. I know you're going to be on a floor below me. I'm not letting you on. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to hit that open button, and I'm fine with it, and I put my head on the pillow, and I'm a good father, and I'm a good husband, and I'm a good person.
Okay, and I like a few D teams, and that
and
makes
you're
me worse.
And you're weird.
You're weird.
Is this thing on? This guy.
Just don't follow him into
Sauce
a building.
Gardner, Kyle Hamilton, just two of our guests tomorrow.
And I'm bringing a broom tomorrow, boys.
Oh, yeah. Nets and Celtics
bringing the broom
tonight.
Tomorrow.
We will chat on Tuesday's show.